What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side of town in Bellevue. Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Let's say hello and good morning to Teron Davenport. He's
What's
the NFL.
Going on?
Hello, sorry, Teron. I had to catch my breath. I was running around before we started this hour. NFL Nation reporter, covers the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com. So what do you make of the NFL, you know, for the most part, is acting like, hey, we plan on it's going to be business as usual this upcoming season. Surprised? Not surprised at all.
I'm not surprised. The show must go on. That's their approach. But I think it's good to go ahead and release the schedule, and you could always tweak it from there. So that's the way you have to look at it. And I don't have a problem with that. I think it's a smart business move.
When do you think we're going to know a little bit more about, you know, training camp, fans in the stands, you know, some of the other particulars? When do you think – I think London, it's pretty – you know, that's all going to go away. That's going to go away in 2020, but – but overall, when do you think we'll learn a little bit more about what is their plan for conducting, I guess, as they say, business as usual?
Man, there's no telling. I mean, this what we're going through is unprecedented. So it's really hard for me, especially me, to sit here and say when. I mean, I say this. I'm glad the whole London thing is out of it because it's just a mess from a logistical standpoint for everyone involved. So that, to me, is a positive. But I couldn't tell you. I guess late June, early July, maybe you'll have a better picture. But who knows how things could work out once the weather starts getting colder. We know that's something that, you know, they're weighing in as well. So there's so many variables. So who knows?
Do you think we're going to be over there for training camp at the end of July or no?
I hope and pray we are. I mean, I miss it. You know, I miss being out there and covering it and seeing the guys do what they do, man. So I'm praying that we are because, like I said, I miss it badly.
What do you make of guys like Jameis Winston and now Andy Dalton, what they've done in their careers and going to – it's one thing to go as backups, but to go backup Drew Brees – and Dak Prescott, are you a little surprised? To me, when you've got spots out there that, you know, like Jacksonville or Pittsburgh or others where it just seems like it would make a little bit more sense, well, right, like it could be just one thing could go wrong and it would be easy to see that, and they're right back into a starting role. But the only way they're getting in the game, you know, in New Orleans or Dallas is if those starting quarterbacks are hurt.
Yeah, I think in the case of Jameis, what he did actually was a very wise decision. You know, he went over to a place that has done a really good job of developing quarterbacks. You know, obviously Drew Brees, he went there and he got better when he went to the Saints from the Chargers. But if you look at it, it's more conducive towards his success, right, when I talk about Winston, because now, you know, he could sit back and he could learn the game a little bit better. Not even learn the game, but just sit back and just observe and take everything in from a situation where, as he said, is a really good quarterback room. I think that gives him a chance to have everything slow down, and I think it's a good thing for him because if he would have just hopped into the next opportunity and it's not the right opportunity, guess what? He's gone. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick Matt Glennon could stick around for a while, Mike Glennon, but a guy like Jameis Winston, Geno Smith, those type of guys, they can't stick around. They're not going to get ongoing opportunities like some of these other guys will get. So you have to hit at the right spot. And I think what he did going to the Saints was good, and that's going to lead to a better opportunity down the road. Now, as far as Andy Dalton, I think he just really he wanted to go home. He expressed interest. He's the one that expressed interest in the Cowboys. So for him, I think it's a good situation because he's going there. Who knows what happens with Dak, right? And let's say the Cowboys somehow mess that situation up. Now Andy Dalton is in a really good position to take over for a team that you know, he wanted to go to. So I think both guys did a good job of picking their spots, and it gives them a chance to just sit back and observe and just relax and refocus.
What did you make of the decision by John Robinson last week not to pick up the fifth year of Corey Davis, who was the fifth pick overall in the 2017 draft, but pick up the fifth-year option on Adoree Jackson, who was the 18th pick in the 2017 draft?
Yeah, well, with those two draft positions that you mentioned, there are two different scales as far as the pay is concerned. So, you know, Corey Davis being a top five pick, you know, for pick 1 through 10, that number is different. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at $15.6 million, $15.8 million, I don't think that really matches what Corey Davis does. And that's no knock on Corey Davis because he is a contributor, but not at $15.8 million. So I get it. I understand why they did that. And who knows? You know, Ryan Tannehill said that he would like to get Corey Davis involved during the season. He admitted missing him at times. So maybe they connect, and maybe Corey Davis puts himself in a position to be able to come back on a nice contract. More than likely, he's going someplace else, in my opinion, but yeah, that remains to be seen. I think Adoree Jackson was a really good option. They had to do that because, you know, Adoree, he's trending up. You know, and at $10.2 million, that's extreme value.
How about Myles Garrett, the only one that had his fifth year picked up of the top five picks? As you mentioned, a little bit different pay scale, but Fournette, Solomon Thomas, Trubisky, all those teams, and Davis, four of the top five picks, their teams that drafted them that high have told them, yeah, we're not picking up your fifth year.
Yeah, and it's crazy because up until this class, like from 2011 to 2016, only eight out of 30 top five picks did not have their option picked up. So this is something that's, you know, you see four of it. You see half of that in 1 year, you know. So it is something that is somewhat unprecedented, but, you know, it just goes to show you that not everything is a guarantee.
Teron Davenport is with us. We're talking Titans. Teron, I want to go back to Corey Davis for a minute. We had a heck of a debate on this. And when I realized what you just pointed out, that when you're the fifth pick, it costs you a lot more, 15.7, I don't think anybody would sign up for that. But I do believe that he, and I think you're going along the same lines as I am, that he's a viable guy that you'd like to have on this team beyond this coming season. So how do they bridge that gap, and how do they find, and do you think this is something that might be on a priority list for John Robinson to try to come to the right price, so that you're not paying 15.7, but you're satisfying Corey Davis that he's a viable part and he's going to be here long term? What do you think the numbers would look like?
I think the numbers would have to be, you know, in the 10 million range. But here's the thing. Not only do the numbers have to be right financially, Corey Davis has to do what's right for him, right? And, you know, I know I personally, if I was in that situation, I'd be very frustrated. And I'm sure to a degree Davis is frustrated. He's just not voicing it. But it's all about opportunity. Receivers want to catch the football, right? They want to touch the football, and he's not getting that opportunity for whatever reason. So I'm sure, you know, a team like the Saints, the Chiefs, type of extra appealing to him.
You know, that's an interesting way of looking at it. It's a lot of confidence in himself, but at the same time, the numbers are the numbers. So is there a part where maybe his inner circle, his agent, his family would say, okay, that could be true, Corey, but at the same time, if there's a secure deal where you're getting a decent amount of guaranteed money, long term. I make the case that, you know, it just, he hasn't had that year yet where things fall right, he stays healthy, and he does maybe get a few more balls thrown his way. He could have a 1,000-yard season for sure. So I don't know. The grass could be greener on the other side, but I think there's something to be said for a guy in the right role at the right price, even if it's not a superstar level.
Yeah, I mean, the grass could be greener, but, you know, let's look at the facts, right? He had 891 yards in 2018, and, you know, Derrick Henry went crazy at the back end of that year. You know what he did that December, but had it not been for that, Corey Davis would have been a 1,000-yard receiver. So it's definitely, the potential is there. People know that he could play. I mean, he has that top five sticker on him too, so teams will make an effort to sign him. I think if he hit the market, he would be an attractive free agent, and I don't think he would be out there for a long time. I think a team would scoop him up. So for him, the opportunities, that's not something that he should be worried about, right? He shouldn't feel forced to do a deal with the Titans, because there will be other opportunities. And, hey, who knows? You know, he could go home to Chicago, right, and play for the Bears and Matt Nagy's offense. That would be good for him.
Yeah, this will be an interesting one to track as we go forward here. So, Teron, I know you appreciate the history of the league. Today, sad news about Don Shula passing away at age 90. But what an unbelievable legacy he left. The more I think about it, one thing that comes to mind for me is he just provided a template, you know, for how to, you know, how to build a program, how to coach an NFL team. So many people, I'm sure, have been influenced by how he did things. Give us your perspective on Don Shula.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first thing I think of is the flawless record, right? But yeah, you're right. My perspective on Don Shula is a guy who has success over decades. You know what I mean? And I think that's remarkable to be able to have the degree of success he had in the 70s, the 80s, then the 90s. I think that's outstanding. There really isn't much more you could say about him. You look at all the things that he did, right? Finding ways to win without a legitimate threat at running back, right? With Dan Marino, you know, you can't say enough about him. I mean, you look at the Marx brothers, what he was able to do with them. You look at just that Killer Bees defense. Don Shula is a legend. Now, I would say he's a top five coach of all time. You know, Bill Walsh, I think, has to be up there, Belichick as well. But after that, you know, Lombardi, Don Shula, is up there with all of them.
Talking to Teron Davenport of ESPN, the NFL Nation Titans reporter for them. And TD, before I ask my question, enjoyed Friday night on Facebook Live with Nate Washington. I think we could have let him go for a couple of hours with all the stories he was telling.
That was
a lot of fun to be a part of.
Oh, that was hilarious. The Randy Moss story had me cracking up. Multiple ones.
If you missed it, we have that on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel, and we actually plan to air that a little later on this week. So I saw that the little blurb that you did, the ESPN Power Rankings for all 32 NFL teams, the Titans are listed at 8th in the Power Rankings, and you wrote the blurb on a player that benefits the most post-draft would be Khalif Raymond because they didn't pick up a receiver. You and I talked a lot about him over the course of the season on Chase and TD, but I tend to agree with you. Khalif Raymond has a great opportunity now with the Titans.
Yeah, he has a tremendous opportunity with the Titans. And, you know, going into the draft, everything was all about getting speed, right? Jalen Reagor, KJ Hamler, these are all guys that, you know, Devin Duvernay, Darnell Mooney, these are all guys that were associated with the Titans because it gave speed. And here's the thing. They had speed on the roster all along in Khalif Raymond and Cam Batson, and they didn't add anybody. So that shows, especially for Khalif Raymond, that shows that they have a belief in him. And I'll just point to the Ravens game. I'll point to the Colts game and the big catches he had. Play action. It's all about finding big plays off of play action. And look, man, Raymond comes through when they go to him, and that's what they need. And I think he's going to have a productive season. Now, what that is, it's not the same as a productive season for a Corey Davis or for an A.J. Brown, but for him specifically in that role, I think he's going to have an outstanding season, and it's great for him because that means the opportunities are going to be there, and they believe in him.
John Robinson has kind of become known for finding players like Khalif Raymond, these players you've never heard of that maybe other teams had and they passed on, and these players that were just viewed as, okay, they're not going to make it, they're going to be practice squad guys, and then just fade off into oblivion. But he has had a knack for finding these guys, and I feel like Mike Vrabel loves players like that, because I'll use a phrase that you like to bring up, especially when we talk about Raymond, you see his ribs, just how hungry they are. That seems to be the Mike Vrabel special.
Yeah, and you know what, the Mike Vrabel special is someone who loves football. And when you're at the point where Khalif Raymond was, you know, practice squad, getting released, getting signed, you clearly love the game because you haven't given it up, despite a lot of signs pointing towards you probably should, you know, and he stuck it out. So, yeah, I mean, it's the love of football, and that's what Vrabel likes, loves in any player, you know. He loves their passion for the game. He even loves it in the media folks, too.
Yes, he does. I know that Mike Vrabel has, when he's been asked about this, about the offseason program having to do everything virtually, you know, he's given a pretty solid Mike Vrabel type answer if he's not that worried about it. But what concerns do you have as now they've gone through this for about a week with some of the rookies as they try to get acclimated?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that you really have to like about Mike Vrabel is he's not going to get overly concerned with what he can't control. Now, as far as the concerns for this rookie class, really it's all about getting in and getting comfortable. Right now, well, as of now, the offensive linemen haven't been incorporated in those Zoom calls. Well, as of last week, we'll put it that way. So that's something that they have to get going. Isaiah Wilson's going to be expected to come in and contribute, you know, and compete immediately. You can't fully compete if you don't have the playbook down and your assignments down. So that's a tough thing for him. Christian Fulton's going to be expected to come in and be able to play as a slot corner as well as on the outside. You have to know that defense and be able to play fast at both of those positions. So I think that's the big thing, just the transition. Even Darrington Evans, you know, everybody's going to be expected to contribute. So you can't do that unless you comfortably have the playbook down. So they're losing valuable time. A lot of guys, they learn the game on the field, right? The classroom is great because it helps you understand things, but you really learn on the field being able to actually execute what it is you're being asked to do. And that's what they're losing out on right now. So, yeah, it's definitely something that could hurt them.
What do you got on tap this week?
This week, we couldn't do a show last week, so we're going to follow up with what we're going to do last week, and we're going to have George Foster, former Georgia offensive lineman. He's actually like a big brother to Isaiah Wilson, so we'll have him on. And then I'm going to, you know, phone a friend. I'm going to bring in my guy Gene Clemens from Football Game Plan, really good X and O guy, so we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things the Titans could do up front as far as being able to scheme pressure.
All right, good stuff. Thanks for the visit. Have a great week.
Yeah, appreciate it. You guys take it easy.
Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans for ESPN and ESPN.com, talking with TD is the podcast. You should go check it out. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about what we just discussed on the other side. Darren, this is what I know before we get out of here for the second hour of the program. About 30 minutes from now, actually a little bit less than that, about 20 minutes from right now, we'll find out what you know. In the third hour, we will keep things rolling. Remember, Vince Ferrara normally joins us at noon on Mondays, but we're going to talk to Trey Wingo coming up at noon. I don't know if you guys saw this, Field Yates, before we get into, talking about Corey Davis and some other things with the Titans. Field Yates put out this tweet, and he said he had the Jags record by seasons. Have you guys seen this?
I have not.
It's the last 9 years. So the Jags were 6-10 last year, 5-11 before that, 10-6 in 2017. Of course, that was the year they made the run to the AFC Championship game. 3-13, 5-11, 3-13, 4-12, 2-14, 5-11. That's Jacksonville the last 9 years.
When did Shad Khan buy the team?
9 years ago? No, I don't know.
Well, let's look.
That is, wow. Yikes. I mean, we know they're bad, right? Everybody likes to make fun of the Jags, but I don't think even I realized it's been that bad, minus the one outlier of 2017. Man, they have done a whole lot of losing over the years.
Yeah,
what separates it is we're talking about the salary cap era, where the everything's stacked for you not to have that much of a drought.
Right.
It's one thing for the Buccaneers, and I happened to catch one documentary on their first two seasons where they lost their first 26 games mm-hmm. in the expansion, 1976 and 77, I think it was. But that was a stacked deck against them. That was going to be tough for them to do any winning. And then, of course, they had some success when Doug Williams was the quarterback, and then they fell back in the 80s when they lost Doug Williams. And they had a long stretch there of bad football. And we mentioned the Bo Jackson thing where they drafted him first and he never signed with them. But there was no salary cap there. So that was a little more understandable, I guess, on some level. But when you get into the salary cap era and you take a look at a run like that, that's just, you're not managing yourself very well if you don't have it come together. Either that or you have some terrible luck.
I have the answer.
Okay.
Shad Khan bought the Jags 9 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
2011. Coincidence?
That one is hard to think that's not a coincidence, right? If you can make the case that's just a coincidence, I'd love to hear you argue that.
I don't think so. He bought that team for $770 million in 2011.
And just drove it into the ground. Of course, you know, for a long time, people have thought he has been meaning to do that. It was kind of like going back to, you know, hate to keep referencing the movie Major League, but, I mean, that's what her whole point was, to drive it into the ground to move him to Miami, right? And from Cleveland to Miami. It just has felt like he's been kind of driving this thing in the ground to get it, for them to be the London team.
Right. And that's backed off a little bit. But
yeah.
I still think I think it backed off probably because the NFL said it needed to back off. You know, that they
probably
needed
to
work with Jacksonville, but it, and then you think that they're going to turn it around in 2017 to go to the AFC Championship game, but as we know, that's an outlier. I mean, that just seems to be an anomaly with the history since 2011. But yeah, I laughed. I when I looked it up, I saw that he bought it in 2011, I really almost busted out laughing because it just makes sense.
Yeah, my guess is Gary Bettman called him and said, hey, just so you know, you might want to go check on Jim Balsillie and Richard Rodier and realize it's not good to sell tickets at another place when you're still in one market. So that has not usually worked. So maybe that's why he backed off the London talk. But let's get into the Corey Davis talk. It seems like we're on different sides of the fence, at least – Chase and I are on one side. I feel like Willie is on the other. So just so I've got this straight, if you're John Robinson, take the money thing out of it, because I know that's going to be easy. You're going to plop it in the $15 million lap and say you can't do it. But you were making a strong case before you knew the money factor. What, you would do that? You would pick up his fifth-year option if we weren't talking about the $15 million?
Well, the money is everything with it. But, yes, if the money were not a factor, yes, I would absolutely pick it up. I mean, but if you would have to admit, if the money were $2 million, you guys would pick it up, wouldn't you?
Well, for $2 million, sure. Right.
So the money is the only factor. It's the number one factor. So $15.7 million, that's too high. I mean, even I can't go that high. But I do think it creates, and Teron hit on a lot of the touch points that goes on from here, because I have to believe they're not ready to give up on Corey Davis. But
why do you have to believe that?
Well, because he's flashed a lot of talent. He's had some big games. He's had some games where you say, hey, this guy is a really good wide receiver. It just hasn't happened on a consistent basis. And I mentioned my argument where you can only do with what you have when you have a run-oriented offense and you're only getting targeted three or four times a game in some cases, then you're just not going to put up huge numbers. But that doesn't mean you're not an effective piece at the right price, a good role player. But I think Teron introduced something that I think is a very big factor that I hadn't really thought of. What does Corey Davis think of himself? Does he see himself as a guy that could go on to another team that has a much different approach offensively, that sprays the ball around and throws it a ton, and he says to himself, I get out of here, I go somewhere else, then I'll put up the numbers that I think I'm capable of. That's a huge one. And then Teron also was talking about, what do you think the market is? What do you think other teams think of Corey Davis and how he could fit in to a different system? Those are factors for sure on what's going to happen after next year.
I think you definitely have to factor that in, Willie. That's a good point. And I wonder sometimes if this was just not the right fit for him, or if he is what he is. And I lean towards, I think he just is what he is, but you never know. I brought this up with Ryan this morning, that if you, let's say, you know, going into
he is what he is. So that's go finish, Chase. Go ahead.
Well, if you want to, yeah, we can talk about that. I mean, and what he is I think he's an average receiver that hasn't lived up to being the fifth overall pick. I don't think he's bad.
Well, he's never going to live up to that.
Yeah,
never going
to
live up.
No, he's not. But one thing
I'm willing to concede that for sure.
Sure. And one thing I brought up with Ryan was that I wonder what this season's going to look like. And let's just say, let's go on the premise that he balls out. He has a career year. He's over 1,000 yards. The touchdown totals go up. My immediate reaction to that is going to be, well, it's a contract year. And if you pay him, are you going to get more of that? Or is it going to just be, well, it was a contract year, he wanted to get paid, he got paid, and now he's going to go back to playing how he was? I don't think that's going to happen. I have seen nothing to make me believe that he's going to have a season like that. But that was just a conversation that we were having this morning, and seeing, you know, what, because you've seen that before with a guy that goes into a contract year and all of a sudden a light switch comes on magically, they get their money and then they go back to how they were.
You know what our Corey Davis talk feels like to me? You know what it feels like to me? It feels a lot like the Mariota talk. That's what it sounds like. It's just excuses. That's all it is. And let me just tell you, give me the example of the excuses where all of a sudden magically they go away and then they turn into what everybody thought. That's the way I view it. And I know that sounds harsh, but it's excuses.
So you're Darren, are
the
you
first year was injuries.
You're going to play it out. You're going to play it out after this year and let him walk.
Yes.
Are you're saying his future is not as a Titan? One more year and we'll try to go to a different direction.
This is a results oriented business, and his results are he's a third or fourth round pick. He's a third or fourth. He's about a third receiver on your team, and that's about it. And that's what he is. And if he's okay with that and they're okay with that and everybody and they can come to agreement for $2 million a year, I'll sign up all day long. But we know that's not how it works, and he's not going to. He has been nothing but an average receiver. They are not in the business. Teams are not in the business of hiding players or saying, hey, you know, we think you're really good, but, you know, you just don't fit what we're doing, especially since they drafted him fifth overall. Not in the fifth round, fifth overall. It is up to the player to make them. Whenever you say, oh, the system doesn't fit, that's just excuses. Because you know what? Great players make the system about you, Nobody in the NFL ignores great players and say, hey, they're great, but they just don't fit into what we're doing. If he was great, he'd be getting the ball instead of A.J. Brown. But A.J. Brown didn't have any problem his first year coming right in and obviously becoming the number one. You know why? Because clearly his skill set is better at this level than Corey Davis.
Do you think that we've had this discussion before? Don't you think that Derek Mason's receiving numbers would have looked different on a different type of offense, on a different type of team?
Absolutely.
He's already already in the Hall of Fame talk right now. Already. I mean, he still put up massive numbers.
And he played for two teams that were run best.
Absolutely. And I think some of those numbers are underappreciated because of the offense he played in on the Ravens
or
and the Titans.
You could make the case that he benefited from that. But you also could make the case that he benefited from that because they were run-based offenses, and so you had to play the run. If they're just wide open and everybody's back there preparing for the pass, maybe it changes his role.
Here's the other part, too, that you have to look at.
That's a fair point.
That you have to look at with D-Mace, and Nate Washington is another example, undrafted guy that ends up having an 11-year career, and it's been the knock on Corey Davis from the beginning. What do Nate Washington and Derek Mason have in common beside the fact that they wore the same number? They had dog in them. They had that chip on their shoulder. And I know that that's different coming from an undrafted guy and a fourth-round pick as compared to the fifth overall pick, but that's been the knock on Corey Davis, and I remember Derek bringing this up many, many times, that you look at him and you watch him, and he doesn't have that dog in him. A.J. Brown's a second-round pick, and he comes to practice and comes to every game with that dog-on-the-bone mentality. And he was – I remember standing there after the season, and he said, well, I didn't achieve my goal this year. And we all kind of looked at each other like, what kind of goal did you set for yourself? You had a tremendous season, over 1,000 yards, and he goes, I wanted 1,500. That's the type of attitude that Corey Davis just hasn't shown that he's had since he's been here.
And it's not gonna change. This is who he is, and he's not gonna explode somewhere else. How many of those guys have left here and exploded somewhere else? I mean, remember Kendall Wright, right? We can go through the list. Kenny Britt, all these guys. The big tight end from South Carolina, who I really liked, but they are what they are.
Bo Scaife?
No. Bo Scaife didn't play. Bo Scaife played at Texas.
Cook.
Jared Cook.
Jared Cook, sorry.
You combined Ben Troop and Jared Cook.
Yeah.
I put Bo Scaife at South Carolina.
By the way, how long has Jared Cook been in the league? Like I said, I really liked him. I did. I got to know him a little bit when he was here. I really liked him. How long has he been in the league now? He's been in the league for a good while. What's the knock on him? I say Jared Cook, what do you say?
I say serviceable, that's lasted, but hasn't lived up to expectations. That first year
flash
here,
brilliance. I mean, he's had some.
There's what it is.
Absolutely
flashes,
tremendous
brilliance
moments.
Yes, he has those games where you go, he has the wow games. He's done it his whole career. He's got two or three wow games in an entire regular season, and it's like my golf game.
He's played 11 years.
It's those two, right. He's been in the league for over a decade. It's like my golf game. It's those wow games. It's those wow shots that keeps me coming back. The problem is, what about the other 15 holes? You know, I had three holes where I felt like I was on the tour. But what about the other 15 holes where I was a hack and he disappeared?
But it's
right?
also worth
That's
something.
That's what he does.
He's also worth something to a team, or else he has not – or he wouldn't have lasted this long in the league.
He looks the part. He's got the frame. He's super athletic. I mean, he's exactly what you want at that position and running down the field. He's everything you want. He's a good guy. But it's too much. Think about it. 11 years, he has had the same. The book has always been, but he's not consistent enough.
He
has those wow moments, those wow games. But he can't do it on a consistent level. Has it been beneficial and has he lasted? Yes. But the book is what the book is. He's been the same the whole career. Nothing's changed.
Exactly. All right, so you're making my argument for me. Jared Cook is a great example, although he's playing in a different position. So he's a useful role player what is the correct role? What is the correct price? That's what the teams have had to decide as Jared Cook has changed addresses, right? At some point, the Titans were like, yeah, but let's cut ties and let him go
4 years
elsewhere.
Here, 3 years
this
in
is
St.
what I'm,
Louis.
This is, right, this is what I'm willing to say about Corey Davis. At the right price, I think he can be a useful number two wide receiver. Best case and worst case, a very useful number three wide receiver. So what are you willing to pay for that with a guy that I think still hasn't hit the ceiling of his talent? So, I mean, I'm the first to say you're not going to pay him number one wide receiver money. You're not going to pay him $15 million this year. But what is the right price? Is it $5, $6, $7 million somewhere in there? I think if you look at the list of wide receivers and what they make, I could see that working out for the prime years of his career.
Let me ask
you, calculated Matthews or Corey Davis, which one? Rashard Matthews in, you know, his, I guess, prime,
Corey
his
Davis,
best years.
By far.
Rashard Matthews.
I'll take Corey Davis easy.
Corey
10
Davis
times out of 10.
By far. Wow. Okay.
By far.
I would disagree. I would disagree with that. By the way, they paid Matthews $5 million a year. That's why I brought that up.
Let me ask this question to Willie's point.
Yeah, I think that now we're starting to get into the ballpark. I think somewhere in there is the right number. The question is Corey Davis willing to take something like that?
If you're asking me if my job is the general manager to oversee money and a cap to give a guy who was, let's see, 67th in, let's see, 84th ranked receiver in receptions last year, 67th in the league in yards, and 105th in TDs, $7 million a year, I would say there's going to be a website called, you know, Fire the GM. Because you don't give a guy
right,
with
so,
those numbers
so let me
$7
just,
million dollars a year.
Let me read off some names here. I'm looking at spotrac.com of some wide receivers in the second contract, right, or at least the second contract, not the first contract. And I'm looking at the price range of, let's say, between $5 and $7 million. Kenny Stills, Cole Beasley, Rashad Perriman, Mike Williams, Randall Cobb, Cordero Patterson, John Ross, Willie Snead, Danny Amendola. So that's just a smattering of guys in that range where I think is the sort of the ball. But Mohamed Sanu would be another one, $6.5 million.
Let me ask you this,
Willie.
It's
what Sanu says.
How many of those guys that you just read off are first-round picks?
It doesn't matter.
John Ross.
We're talking about
ninth.
The second. It doesn't matter
overall.
Where they're picked at the. We're evaluating a guy after he's been in the league for 4 years. You got to decide. I mean, it's history now where he was picked.
But
you
that's
going to
matter.
Do you want
here.
Him on your team going forward.
That's the point.
Why
that
does it
I,
matter?
That's the point that I'm trying to make. That's going to matter.
Well,
here.
That's your. I don't think it matters. I think it depends on your expectation level. That's you hoped he would be better. He is who he is, right? He's not a star. You're not going to pay him as a star. But is he your number two? Can he be your number two behind A.J. Brown? I think he can at the right price.
I don't know. I don't see it. I honestly feel like
you don't
like
think he's a number two wide receiver in
I'm
the league?
I'm not saying that.
Going
I think
forward?
He can't. I think he can be a number two. I just don't think it's going to be here. I don't think he can shake the fact that people like us are sitting here talking about that he's the fifth overall pick and he hadn't lived up to it. I think that bothers him. I think that's in his head. So I feel like that he is in the situation in his career where – a fresh start might do him good.
Why do you think that bothers him?
I don't know. I don't have the answer for that, but that's just the sense I get.
Well, I'm asking what are you basing that off of? Has he said stuff?
No, I just feel like that there's an attitude sometimes and I you know, he's never been the most vocal type with the media especially, but sometimes you can just read a guy and know that, okay, maybe they just need a fresh start. Maybe they just this just isn't going to work here. And I know the offenses have changed, but we made that same excuse for Mariota. And I think by the end, I looked at it at least with Mariota as, you know what, this just isn't going to happen here. Maybe he goes somewhere else. Maybe he goes to Las Vegas. I almost said Oakland. Maybe he goes to Las Vegas and takes that job for Carr and has a nice career. I don't know. But I just feel like it wasn't going to work here, and I made that determination pretty early on last season. With Corey Davis, I've already made that determination. I just don't feel like, yeah, he could be a number two. I just don't believe it's going to be here because of some of the things that we've talked about.
All right, we'll come back.
Well, let me make one last. Okay, we're going to continue this on the other side. I have one point I want to bring to the
this
table.
This is what I know, so get it out there.
Okay, well, they didn't throw the ball very much down the stretch of the season. Can we agree with that, right? It was Derrick Henry. So they're not throwing the ball 35 or 40 times. So here are his targets down the stretch of the season. When he was in the lineup. 5, 3, 2, 4, 6, 4, 5. And he had decent stats, you know, not outstanding, but I would say that he played his role pretty well as the second or third option, depending on the week, depending on the matchup. So I think there's the right role. Again, what are you willing to pay? What's he willing to accept for the second contract? I think
two of the three playoff
player.
Games might as well not even suited up. Wasn't even
right.
Didn't even.
But who did?
Wasn't
who
even
did
there.
Catch the ball? They didn't throw the ball.
Okay.
What were Ryan Tannehill? He passed for less than 100 yards in each of the two wins.
Well, let me ask you something. Why wasn't Baltimore. He targeted? Give me AJ Brown's targets.
Because they handed the ball to Derrick Henry.
What were A.J. Brown's targets those last five games that you just reeled off for Corey Davis that were 2, 4, 6, 4, 5?
A.J. Brown is the number one wide receiver. A.J. Brown
is number
one.
So they went to him, but they didn't go to Corey Davis. Why did they
go to
A.J. Brown?
My number one wide receiver.
Oh. So the guy who's taken first round, fifth pick overall, and the second round pick, they wanted to make him the number one? Or did he take
Darren, against
that?
The Ravens? Against the Ravens, they threw the ball 14 times.
I understand that.
So even A.J. Brown didn't get very many touches in that game.
Right. I'm asking you, why do you think A.J. Brown got the carries, or in the targets, the receptions, the stats? Why did he get it?
Because he's the best wide receiver on the team.
Well, why did that happen? Did they choose him over Corey Davis, or did that happen because he has a better skill set at this level?
He's got a better skill set. Okay. He's better than Corey Davis.
Okay.
You need more than one wide receiver on your team. It's unlike quarterback where they had to – Marcus Mariota, you play one quarterback. He wasn't quite up to it. They tried something else, and they moved on. You need more than one wide receiver. It's a little bit of a different deal.
All right, tell us what you know to wrap up the second hour. That's next. 615-737-1025. Are you out there? Where are you? Let's get your participation. Tell us what you know. It's very simple. It's open-ended. It's take it however you want. Just, you know, keep it clean where we can air it. Best one will get a $25 gift card, and I don't know exactly where because I see conflicting reports. Marquise, and I think right now his mic is not working, so I'm waiting to hear back from Marquise.
Actually, I think we may have gotten that fixed. But
really?
We're working on your conflicting reports.
Do you know what? Do you see what I'm?
Yes.
Okay. All right. He is saying Starbucks. Okay. I saw two different. So there you go. $25 gift card to Starbucks. There you go. Best. This is what I know. All you have to do is just tell us what you know. 615-737-1025. Who wants to start?
I can start it up.
Okay. Get it going.
This is what I know. During times like yesterday, we have the big storm coming through, and you possibly could use your power. If you're not already doing it, and I think a lot of you are, the best thing to follow on Twitter to keep up with the weather, especially if you have, say, satellite TV and it's going in and out, the signal goes out, that's what happened to me. You can track the weather by going to Nash Severe WX. These guys are awesome. They're so tuned in locally with everybody. They have tremendous coverage with radar and everything. It's fantastic. And here's a stat from yesterday. Yesterday's wind event, this is right from their Twitter handle, Nash Severe WX. Yesterday's wind event produced the fifth strongest wind gust measured at BNA and was likely the most widespread power-disrupting straight-line wind event system since 2004. Gusts were at Category 1 hurricane strength. So that was they measured it out at the airport at 72 miles an hour, the wind gusts. Wow. But that's a great Twitter handle to follow. Honestly, it can keep you safe in some tough times. That's what I know.
Yeah, it was strange to see 60. And, you know, usually when you think of 60 and 70-mile-per-hour winds, you're thinking rut-row tornado, right? But not the case. It's just crazy how I saw trees in my backyard, you know, moving certain ways that I've never seen him move before, and I was like, uh-oh, that's not good. Luckily, they didn't break off or get uprooted or anything like that. This is what I know. Going to be a really cool scene here in our city tomorrow. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds are going to fly over our town, which is going to be great. It's going to fly over Nashville tomorrow. I haven't seen a time yet. I know they've been doing this in other places, but
I think they did Atlanta over the weekend.
Yes, they did do Atlanta. Uh-huh. I think they did Philadelphia, right? And
yeah. That's cool, yeah. Though. That's gonna be neat. Are they flying over now? I hear something flying over.
No, that is not them. That'll be tomorrow. Let's see. Their plans are Nashville, Miami, Tampa, Tallahassee. Remember, they're all down in Florida. Jacksonville. So it makes sense that they blanket the state of Florida. Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Detroit, Chicago, Indianapolis, Nashville, New Orleans, and Corpus Christi, Texas. So those were some of the places, New York City, New Jersey, and Philadelphia. So those are the places that they're planning on flying over. So if we get a time, we will certainly pass it along when you can be looking for the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds to pass over our great city tomorrow. What else I know is ESPN is planning on airing South Korean baseball games, one a day. The season opener will be, I think, tonight at midnight, I believe. So it's going to be overnight.
Hey, why not?
But they are going to air South Korean baseball games, one a day.
That'll be cool. That's I'm sure they'll run on tape delay.
Oh, I'm sure. Chase, what do you got?
This is what I know, that last week, of course, NASCAR announced they're returning May 17th. So a lot of people have been wondering, what does that mean for the iRacing Pro Invitational Series that people have enjoyed during quarantine, where the drivers have been racing a computer game? Of course, it's going to wrap up, but they announced, and this is going to be really cool, that they're not going to go to a track that they currently race. They're going to go to the famous North Wilkesboro Speedway, a short track that has been closed for quite some time. Jeff Gordon won the final race there back in 94, I think it was, 95 or 94. So they're going to race there with throwback paint schemes. Should be a lot of fun. I have really enjoyed it. I said on Chasing Checkers that I think iRacing has kept the sport alive during this downtime and also helped it by getting a new audience. So that should be a lot of fun on Fox on Saturday. They will run at North Wilkesboro.
All right. 615-737-1025. What do you know? Let's start with Doug. Doug, what do you know?
Hey, guys. Been a while?
Yes.
But
how you doing?
Trusting, man. The Last Dance. I mean, the number one show on TV. But the last couple of weeks, it just hadn't been in my favor. You know, last week, a tree from a storm took out my TV reception and couldn't get anything. And yesterday, I missed those episodes because satellite coverage wasn't restored in time for me to see that show. So this is what I know, man. For the Last Dance to be the number one show on TV, I still ain't seen it.
Oh,
they said
no.
It's better than Tiger King, and I ain't seen that either, and I don't plan on it. So I'm just going to wait till it comes out on something. I'm tired of trying.
So
I haven't seen anything. You guys talk about it. I'm just in a blur. I'm thinking, dang, is that what happened? Robin's that good? Scotty said that? But I've not seen anything. I'm dependent on you guys, because for the stars to not line up, a tree one time, reception just went out from satellite. The next time, I'm throwing in the white flag, dude. So I'm just going to wait. Wow.
Thank you, Doug. I'm sorry that you have been. We're actually going to talk about The Last Dance in the next hour. So we're going to talk to Trey Wingo, and then we'll get into The Last Dance. Wow, that's too bad. He's missed the two shows that have been talked about the most during quarantine time, Tiger King and The Last Dance. Let's go to Big Al. Big Al, what do you know?
Hey, guys, how you doing? It's been a while.
Yes, it is. How are you doing?
I am hanging in there.
Good.
A lot of prayer and a lot of faith, but this is what I know. I've just listened to you guys about talking about the wide receivers, and I'm praying because, you know, I'm a big Patriots fan, but Titans are my number two team. I'm praying that Corey Davis has a breakthrough, because who's your deep threat for the Titans, and there's going to be consistent deep threat, and who can beat one-on-one coverage? And the big thing about the rookie wide receiver was he couldn't get off on one-on-one coverage, even though he's a rookie. So I'm hoping, for the Titans' sake, that Corey Davis breaks through and catches more balls or gets more balls thrown at him. Also, last week y'all were talking about Waco or Peaky Binders.
Yep.
Peaky trumps Waco 10 times.
Really? Okay. Really. Two episodes in. We got to bring that up, too. Thank you, Al.
Really?
You continue to be safe. Yes.
Also, I can never remember the third guy on this show now. What's his name?
Chase
McAbey.
You sound like Steve Lehman. It freaks me out. Every time you talk, I say, what's Steve Lehman doing on the show?
Not Steve Lehman.
Love you guys, and give your wives a big kiss for me because they're all beautiful.
We will, Al. Thank you. Good to hear from you, man.
Great to hear from you, Al.
Best food in town right there, Big Al.
That is the man.
He is the man.
Big Al's Deli.
Whew. That's some good eating
Salem
right
Town.
There. David, final one. What do you know?
Hard to follow that. Love your show. Glad
Thank
to have
you.
Me on. What I know is Jadeveon Clowney on Clowney Watch. He is Ricky Williams 2.0. He plays if he wants, when he wants, how he wants. Just go back to the Steve Spurrier interview for the bowl game. That's what I got for Clowney. Give him a big pass.
Has he worn a wedding dress?
Do what?
Has he worn a wedding dress on Sports Illustrated?
He'll only play if he wants, when he wants, and how he wants. That's... Give him a pass. Give
okay.
him a pass back to the Seahawks.
There you go. All right, David.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So he's saying pass on Clowney. All right, we'll come back. Third hour with Trey Wingo. That's next.
Hey, guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.